grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Une émission par Nadia Lichtig.
Aujourd'hui, nous rencontrons pour la deuxième fois James Day, physicien et médiateur scientifique au Stuart Blossom Quantum Matter Institute à l'Université de la Colombie-Britannique à Vancouver. Il y travaille à rendre accessibles les phénomènes de la matière quantique à travers des démonstrations expérimentales. La démonstration que nous allons entendre explore le comportement des différents matériaux, cuivre, laiton, aimant et supraconducteurs, soumis à des champs magnétiques et à des températures extrêmement basses. On commence par refroidir du cuivre avec de l'azote liquide. En refroidissant, ses propriétés changent. Les électrons y circulent plus librement, ce qui renforce certains effets physiques, notamment la capacité à ralentir la chute d'un aimant. Ce phénomène s'explique par la loi de Lenz. Les matériaux génèrent un champ magnétique opposé à celui de l'aimant, créant une forme de frein invisible. Puis, un matériau particulier, un oxyde céramique appelé yttrium barium cuivre oxygène, est refroidi à son tour. À très basse température, il devient supraconducteur. Il ne présente plus aucune résistance électrique et expulse totalement le champ magnétique, un phénomène appelé effet Meissner. Un aimant peut alors léviter au-dessus de sa surface. Enfin, la démonstration rappelle que si ces effets sont bien connus, leur origine reste en partie inexpliquée. Pourquoi certains matériaux deviennent supraconducteurs demeure aujourd'hui encore mystérieux. Mais écoutons maintenant James Day.
C'est un métal alloy et copper, qui est un pur métal, et c'est aussi copper. Je vais le mettre ici et. Pour some liquid nitrogen in here so that we can cool that piece of copper down. It'll take, you can see right now there's a fair bit of boiling going on because the copper is relatively hot. This is, you can think of this like lava dropping into the ocean, right? Like the water around it boils because the lava is very hot. The boiling temperature of nitrogen is 77, so a room temperature piece of metal is relatively hot, and you can see all the boiling happening around the outside. But in about 5 or 6 or 7 minutes, this boiling, first of all, because it's boiling, I'm gonna have to top it up a few times, but what we're seeing and hearing will change for a bit. And so when it's about to change, I'm gonna stop whatever conversation we're having and we'll focus here, and then we can talk a little bit more about that. But in the meantime, here so we have a little more space. Okay, so if you want to come stand where I just was, and I'll stand on the other side here. We'll go through parts of this demo. Okay, so first of all, this outer track is made with neodymium-based rare earth magnets, which means you shouldn't set your phone down on here or a credit card because the magnetic field is strong enough that it could affect the memory. And then I've also got some different shapes of the same sort of magnet here. Now this is the roughly the shape and size of a coin, and everyone has dropped a coin before. I'm going to do a very simple demonstration where I just drop it on the wood, and we can actually switch the order here. And there shouldn't be anything surprising about how this magnet falls onto the wood. I should point out, brass and copper are non-magnetic materials, okay? But there are some differences between the two. These are both metals, this is not, which means these conduct electricity, wood does not. The wood has different densities than the two metals, but I'm gonna now drop the magnet on the brass, and we can maybe see a little bit of a difference in how the magnet behaves, but not a lot. And I'm now going to drop it on the copper, and I'll go back and forth a few times so we can compare and contrast, and you can let me know if you notice a difference or not. Yeah, you already. So what do you notice?
Straight, like here is still a balance, but here it's just
attraction. There's not really a bounce or anything to it. It's almost like it's cushioned a little bit. Now, do you have any idea why that is? Guesses?
Well, there must be some attractions happening.
There are, in a sense, but it's not an attraction that is a permanent part of the copper. Once this cools down, I'm going to do the same sort of effect on the cold piece of copper, and we can talk about how temperature plays a role. Okay? So, more bouncy, less bouncy. Before we start talking about what causes that, I'm going to show you another related demonstration. So here I've got another magnet, and then I've got a piece of brass that's the same metal, which is about the same shape. And the first thing, I've got a copper tube, and this the brass piece and the magnet fit in the copper tube. And not surprisingly, if I drop the brass piece, it falls exactly as you would expect it would. A reminder that copper is not magnetic, but if I drop the magnet down the copper tube, it takes significantly longer to fall.
So there's resistance in a way.
So if you look from above, it slows down. And so what is happening there, even though the copper isn't magnetic, I mentioned it's a conductor of electricity, a conductor of electricity, and that means anything that conducts electricity just means that it has electrons that are mobile and that can move. But in some materials, the electrons' mobility might be greater or lesser. And actually in copper, the electrons are pretty mobile, which is why we use copper for all the wiring in our houses instead of something like brass. In brass, the electrons are mobile, but they're not as mobile as they are in copper. And so what we're seeing here, when I drop the magnet, we're seeing something that's an effect of how mobile the electrons are. So there's a law in physics called Lenz's law, L-E-N-Z, and it essentially states that materials don't like to have changing magnetic fields in their interiors. And so if I drop a magnet, when it gets close, all of these materials will feel a changing magnetic field. And when I say they don't like it, what the physics law tells us is these materials, their electrons will start to move in a way that generates a magnetic field. Because moving electrons, electricity generates a magnetic field. The electrons will start to move in a way that generates a magnetic field that tries to cancel out the one that's being applied to them. Now, in wood, it has electrons in there, but they are not mobile. And so the wood can't do anything about the changing magnetic field. The brass can a little, because its electrons can move, but gravity still wins, and the magnet still falls down. In copper, gravity still wins again, but that little bit of cushioning is because the electrons get moving enough that they can actually push against the changing magnetic field enough that we can see it by eye, that there's some sort of cushioning happening. And when I did the demonstration with the tube, a couple of things. First of all, when electrons move to generate the magnetic field, say pointing up, the electrons need to move in a perfect circle, and in this tube, they're essentially restricted to move that way. The tube also prevents the magnet from flipping. Oh, I'm going to pay attention here now. So the boiling now has mostly stopped, but it got a little more exciting there for a moment. And the reason it did was related to also why I could stick my hand in the liquid nitrogen. And here, actually, I'm going to do something similar, but a lot safer. You're going to just take your finger and very quickly, in and out, yes. Just touch the bottom of the styrofoam, in and out. Finger doesn't feel wet, barely cold. So I mentioned the light and frost effect downstairs. You're probably familiar with, for example, seeing water droplets on a hot skillet, and those droplets, they skate around and they survive a lot longer than a little drop of water should, given how hot the skillet is. But what happens is that the hot skillet evaporates the water on the underside of the droplet, which forms a little barrier of water vapor, which first of all floats the droplet, but also that vapor barrier serves as an insulating layer from the extreme hot of the skillet and the water droplet above. So it sort of protects it from really boiling away. The same thing happens when I put my finger in and out. My finger's hot. The moment I stick it in, all of the liquid nitrogen around there evaporates, and my finger is protected by a small jacket of nitrogen gas. Now the gas is cold, so if I leave my finger in there for even just a couple seconds, the gas will freeze my finger. This copper has a lot more thermal mass than my finger does, and for the first 5 or 6 minutes, the boiling that was happening was really just maintaining a vapor barrier between the liquid and directly against the body of the copper. But like I just mentioned, the gas is cold, so that copper block is cooling and cooling. And then when we started to hear it and see it boil more violently, that was the moment when the copper was cooled enough that it could no longer create this protective barrier, and the liquid was touching it directly. And so the boiling was more exciting until the copper reached thermal equilibrium, the same temperature as the liquid. And so now there's no boiling happening at the edge of the copper. So this piece of copper is at about 290 Kelvin, and this piece of copper is at about 77 Kelvin. So it's a lot colder. Okay, so I was mentioning dropping the magnet down this tube. So again, the copper feels the changing magnetic field. The electrons get moving in a circular fashion to generate a magnetic field pointing up to counter the one that's pointing down as the magnet is falling. And it's really able to, over a long period, it's able to push against that applied magnetic field. It's a bit of a force up, which goes some way in canceling the effects of gravity, but still gravity wins. The magnet falls out at the end anyway. So the next thing we're gonna do, and I'll actually I'll have you make a prediction here. So I mentioned that the electrons are more mobile in room temperature copper than brass because we see a little bit of cushioning. So the question is now, in cold copper, are the electrons the same mobility? Mm-hmm. Are they even more mobile than warm copper? Or are they less mobile now that we've cooled it down? So do you want to give a guess?
Yes, my prediction is they're more mobile.
They're more mobile? Okay, so if this is what brass looks like, yeah, and in warm copper it's more mobile, we see cushioning.
Yeah.
Cold copper, if it's even more mobile, it's even more cushioning.
Yes, floating.
Not quite floating.
Yes.
So gravity still wins. But you can see that this cushioning effect, oops, I've got to drop it properly. The cushioning effect is further enhanced because the electrons now are even more mobile. The cartoon picture, I like to think of this, so the, if you built this cartoon in your head where a copper is, a chunk of copper is a bunch of copper atoms at lattice sites, and then the electrons moving through that background, at room temperature, the copper atoms have some kinetic energy to them. They're shaking around, and because they're shaking and jiggling in their lattice sites, the electrons that are trying to move through that background are more likely to get bumped by one of those copper nuclei and scattered, and that's the internal electrical resistance that they feel. When we cool everything down, those copper atoms are moving a lot less, and so it's easier for the electrons to move through this background when the whole background isn't shaking. So the electrons have an easier time moving through the reduced temperature copper than the warm copper, but they don't move perfectly because gravity still wins. The electrons can't keep generating this repulsive force. Okay, so what we have here is a sample of a ceramic oxide that, for shorthand, we just refer to as YBCO, which is just the first letters of the four elements that make it up. So yttrium, barium, copper, and oxygen. So there's copper in here, but it's an oxide, and in general, oxide materials don't conduct electricity very well. So because it's ceramic, it if I drop it on the floor, it might shatter the way my coffee mug might. It's not magnetic. And if I try to pass an electrical current through here, I can force one through, but it doesn't conduct electricity well at all. At room temperature. Okay. Everyone is familiar with how changing the temperature can bring a material from one state into another, the most common being our experience with water. You can have a glass of liquid water, and if you turn the temperature down, it undergoes a phase transition and becomes a solid. Or if you turn the temperature up, it undergoes a phase transition and becomes a vapor. Materials can change phases without it being obvious by eye. So actually, as an example with magnets, all of these permanent magnets that you might have on your fridge, if you turn the temperature up enough, the magnetism goes away. And then you can turn the temperature back down and the magnetism can be reintroduced. So you can melt the magnetism in and out, even though your magnet physically might not look any different as you do that. So this material, like I said, is kind of a plain, boring, not exciting ceramic. But if we turn down the temperature, it will enter a new state of matter and will have different properties. It won't look any different. And for this material, we just need to turn the temperature below 93 Kelvin. Okay? And so I'm just going to put it in the liquid nitrogen, and it's going to cool a lot faster than the copper. But this is going to cool it down to 77 Kelvin. This up again, and so once that boiling has stopped and it's reached thermal equilibrium, I'm telling you that it will have changed states of matter. It will have become what we call a superconductor. Now, a superconductor actually has two criteria have to be met for us to call something a superconductor. So the one that almost everyone knows about, if they know anything about superconductivity, is that they have zero electrical resistance. So the electrons don't experience any internal friction. The resistance is zero. The other thing that something must have, and so that's just, we would call that perfect conductivity. So brass is an okay conductor, copper is a good conductor, cold copper is a great conductor, but none of those are superconductors. This is a superconductor, zero electrical resistance, perfect conductivity. The other character that it must have is what we call, it's called the Meissner effect, after the scientist named Meissner. Technically, it means perfect diamagnetism. There's all sorts of magnetic states. The permanent magnets on your fridge are just, we would call them ferromagnetic. But materials can be ferromagnetic, anti-ferromagnetic, ferrimagnetic, paramagnetic, diamagnetic. There's a new one we've discovered just in the last year or two called ultramagnetic. There's all sorts of magnetic states. Diamagnetism means that it will not, it expels magnetic fields from its interior. So if you apply a magnetic field, it will push that magnetic field away. Okay? Now when I was dropping this magnet onto the cold copper, it has some diamagnetism because it's pushing away, but the magnet eventually settles on the copper, and once it's settled on there, some of the magnetic field from this magnet is inside the copper. So the copper doesn't have perfect diamagnetism. I'm telling you that this ceramic is now a superconductor, which means perfect diamagnetism, so it completely expels all magnetic fields from its interior. And it does so the same way. The electrons get moving to generate a magnetic field, but those electrons don't experience any friction. So once they get moving, they keep moving literally forever. Which means I'm gonna start with a smaller magnet. I've got a small magnet here. If I put it over top of the superconductor and then let go, it will levitate. So it's levitating. Oh, it's a little unstable there. It's levitating because, pull this back down. When I put it over top, the electrons in the superconductor start moving in a way to generate a field that completely expels what I'm applying, and then they experience no friction whatsoever once they're up there. This is one of our newer demo pucks. It's actually not as stable as some of our old ones used to be. Anyway, there's no reason why we need to do a magnet on top of the superconductor. We've got this outer track. Where did that go? There it is. We've got this outer track, which is made of magnets. And so I can take the superconductor out, and as long as it stays below 93 Kelvin, it will have these effects. Now, when I take it out, it will slowly start to warm up. But until it does, it'll levitate.
Incredible.
And you can see that it's starting, the superconductivity is starting to melt out of it as it warms up. And so it loses its perfect diamagnetism and its perfect conductivity and comes off the track. And if we do this enough times, you'll notice it's always, if I give it a push, it's always the front end that sags down first, and that's because the front end of this puck is the one moving through the atmosphere, so it warms up the quickest. The same way when you're driving in the rain, your front windshield gets a lot more wet than your back one. And so I was mentioning to you the other day, Nadia, we know in general how and why superconductivity happens. It's because electrons manage to partner up and they become a type of particle where we have the physics to explain this sort of resulting behavior. But it's the problem we're still working on. What allows those electrons to partner up in the first place? So there are a number of elements on the periodic table that can go superconducting at low temperature, like aluminum, lead, for example. And for those materials, it's lattice vibrations give the electrons the slightest attractive potential and allow them to pair up. But for a material like this, we still don't know what the pairing mechanism is. And whoever eventually solves it will for sure win a Nobel Prize. It's a big deal. It might be that lattice vibrations play a small role. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I don't know if I've mentioned to you or you have enough background, do you know what the concept of spin is? Mm-hmm. Particles and things have properties. I have a height and I have a mass. Electrons have their particle. They have a mass, and all electrons have the same mass. Electrons have a charge, and they all have the same charge. And there's another property that actually these subatomic particles have. They can have a number of properties, but one is called spin. And we call it spin. It's like an inherent angular momentum. So you know how the Harlem Globetrotters can spin a basketball and balance it on their finger? And the reason the basketball is stable is because when it's spinning, it's got angular momentum, which doesn't like to change. That gives it some stability. But when you spin a basketball, you can spin it one way or the other. And depending on which way you spin it, we might define the angular momentum to be up along the axis this way if it's spinning one direction, and if it's spinning the other direction, the angular momentum is pointed opposite. So electrons behave as though they're spinning one way or the other. They're not actually spinning because they're not like a small little basketball. They're a weird little thing, but they behave like their angular momentum is either one way or the other. And so while they have a mass and while they have a charge, and that's the same for all electrons, they can have one of two properties of spin. And to keep it simple, we physicists just say spin up or spin down, okay? How come I started talking about spin? What were we saying?
That you don't know why.
Oh, that's right. So there are electrons have this property of spin. It can be up or down. And then also, if you use a helpful but incorrect model of what an atom looks like, you can sort of think of, they refer to it as like the solar system model. So you can imagine the nucleus in the middle, an electron orbiting around. That's not quite how atoms work, but if that's the picture you have in mind, you can imagine a nucleus, an electron that orbits, that also has spin up or spin down, and you can get effects that, you can have effects in materials where the spin and the orbit is strongly or weakly coupled one to the other. So, and these sorts of spin orbit coupling ideas, physicists have figured out ways that might make electrons more or less attracted to each other. Because the electrons have spin, I mentioned actually early in the demonstration that with this too, if we have electrons going around in a circle, they generate a magnetic field. Well, if you think of an electron as a ball of charge which is spinning, that spin generates a small magnetic field. So you can also imagine in a sea of electrons that are spinning, you can get magnetic waves depending on how the electrons are distributed. And those sorts of magnetic features can also influence whether or not electrons might feel an attractive potential between the two. So all sorts of ideas for what might generate an attractive potential, and perhaps they work in concert with one another. But for a lot of these high temperature superconductors, high temperature is a relative term because 93 Kelvin is still pretty cold, but it's a lot warmer than 1 Kelvin or 2 Kelvin. For a lot of these high temperature superconductors, we don't know what the pairing mechanism is, and it's really hard to think of experiments where you can get a clean, clear, concise answer that no one can regulate. So that's why it's so tricky. That's why it's taking 40 plus years.
Come back. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Une émission par Nadia Lichtig.